With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to the superstar Jenny Green and her fantastic co-host, the legend Dustin. What an afternoon of unbelievable crack. Who's your Paddy? Happy St. Patrick's Day. This is Game On.
And unbelievable tunes as well. Coming up today, we're live to Ruby at Cheltenham as the Irish win big again.
It's time to put the kettle on. She's won the championship. She's beaten Nuba Negra. Shaka.
Stephen Ferris knows all about playing in the Irish back row. He gives us his thoughts on CJ's Standard's exit.
As much as we all want to see CJ Standard, you know, keep turning it out, in fairness to him, like 50 caps, and he only made his international debut in 2015. You know, that's a lot of matches under the belt in a short space of time. So maybe it is taking its toll on him as well.
Plus, we've Vinnie Perth to preview the League of Ireland kickoff and hear about a unique fundraising drive for Limerick Camogie.
Game On 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM, and we would love to hear from you, especially because we're going to be heading over to Cheltenham really shortly and chatting to Ruby. But Marie, what a day for the Irish.
It's been unbelievable. I'm so glad that I was able to sit down today and watch so many of the races. Just a brilliant day for the Irish. Irish trained horses winning 6 races of 7 on the card, including the Queen Mother Champion Chase, which saw Willie Mullins trained Shaq and Persuad go to the post as the odds-off favourite. But it was Henry de Bromhead's trained Put the Kettle On that won. And there was actually so many stories, I don't even know where to go from here. I think Tiger Roll was one that, just watching it, Donica, I couldn't help but think, imagine if there was crowds there today just to see Tiger Roll to cross that line and just look absolutely phenomenal. And Monkfish, another one as well, in the Brown's Advisory Novice Chase, just brilliant seeing Willie Mullins, hearing Willie Mullins talk afterwards, and the pressure that was on. You could even tell from Willie Mullins how nervous he was, and you don't hear Willie Mullins being too nervous. And then Rachel Blackmore again got us off to just a brilliant start on Bob Olinger, as Ruby had predicted yesterday.
Absolutely, and it was you mentioned him there. It was Rachel getting us off to an unbelievable start. Yeah, and Paddy's Day as well. It's important, you know, just to be proud of you know, everything that we're about. Going over to England there and putting it down. And you mentioned Tiger Roll. There was unbelievable excitement around my house because my little girl Sophie actually won an Easter egg because Tiger Roll won the Grand National. That was the sweep a few years ago when it won the Grand National. So brilliant excitement with all of it. So we're going to catch up with Ruby really shortly. So keep your texts coming into 51552 with all your racing stuff or anything you might want to bounce out them. Marie, there is a lot going on tonight though. There's Champions League soccer.
There's going to be a day sitting on the couch again for anyone who's at home because we don't have anything else to do. But there's Champions League, as you said. And by the end of tonight, the last two quarterfinal spots will be filled. Chelsea are in a good position. They are 1-0 up from the away leg against Atletico Madrid. And Bayern Munich hold a 4-1 lead over Lazio. So they should be interesting games at 8 o'clock tonight just to keep the day going. And I think, Donica, the build-up to the England-Ireland rugby game is really starting to take off as well, as it often does when it all is on Paddy's weekend. The Paddy's Day marks a big moment for it, and today there was a bit of team news that England centre Henry Slade looks like he could be fit for Saturday's game against Ireland. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've mixed emotions on this. He's a quality player. He plays for Exeter, always puts in huge performances. During my time in Worcester, I was lucky to be around Ollie Lawrence, and he's an incredible talent that I feel Eddie Jones hasn't given a whole lot of opportunity. Being a little bit harsh, I wouldn't like to see him going out this weekend. Of course, you don't never want to see him going out against Ireland, but there's quality there for England, whoever they put out. But you're right, it's the start now of a run in, and it's mad, it's all momentum. Little things like the racing, it leads into a big weekend, and hopefully we can keep it going. We were lucky enough to catch up with with Stephen Ferris earlier on, and I began by asking him about CJ Sanders' news.
Game On Rugby.
Yeah, strange, I think. Like, my wife texted me, I was out and about, and she said, see the site, said CJ Standard retiring, ? And of course, straight away, what do? You get your phone out, have a look on Twitter, and your news feed comes up, and it's just all about CJ Standard. And, you know, the statement that he released, you know, 2 or 3 pages long, Lots of emotion in it, lots of thank yous and everything else. But yeah, it just feels all a bit too premature for me, considering he is still fairly young. In my own opinion, he still has plenty to offer for Ireland and for Munster. But you got to respect his decision. His wife and his kid, I believe, are in South Africa, and he's wanting to go back and you know, raise his family back home there and get back on the farm and everything else. So, yeah, it's a little bit like yourself, probably shock, but at the same time, you got to respect that. And like just on CJ, you know, he's been brilliant since he's come in. 2012, he arrived in Munster, and he's been brilliant. There's huge appreciation for him across the whole island of Ireland, and nobody can question what he's given to a red jersey of Munster, a green jersey of Ireland, or even, you know, the red of the British and Irish Lions. So, you know, a tenacious guy. You know, very genuine by all accounts. I don't know him personally, Donica, maybe you do, but you know, coming out of the Ireland camp is that, you know, he is a good human being, and they're all respecting this decision.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a guy you'd love to tug out with, Fez. But just on it, because you'll know best, that attritional back row position at the moment, of course he could have signed on for another few years, but with everything we're seeing in rugby at the moment, Fez, do you think this is something we're going to see more of? Guys kind of saying, I know where this is going to finish up, and I'm quite happy to come out, you know, to walk away now while I'm in great health.
Yeah, possibly, Donica, and like a lot of people, you know, a lot of players continue to play rugby because financially it's very good, and if you can eke out another couple of years, you know, why do players go to France or go to Japan for short stints at the end of their career, or go to Worcester Warriors and, you know, raid their bank account, you know, to get
vicious thing.
Subtle. I liked it.
but it is true, like, and you know, we all know that money isn't everything, but as the pay keeps rising in professional rugby, and you know, with the new deals in CBC, and you know, what way it's going to go in the future, who knows? You possibly will, because it is so attritional. There are bumps and bruises, you know yourself, Donners, the amount of niggles you probably carry around now, it can be very taxing. So possibly you may be right, we may see more of this in the future. And as much as we all want the CCD standard, you know, keep turning it out, in fairness to him, like 50 caps, and he only made his international debut in 2015. You know, that's a lot of matches under the belt in a short space of time. So maybe it is taking its toll on him as well.
Donica, we know there are an abundance of back rowers in the international setup, but what about Munster? How are they going to fare without him?
Yeah, I do think there's good depth chart of younger players, Marie, but when you're trying to compete at the top level, you need marquee players, and he's certainly that. And he's going to be a massive loss to Irish rugby, but I think it's going to be even bigger for Munster. Like Stephen said, he was one of these guys that went out every week and was always, you know, there was times there when some of the what you'd call the marquee players were missing, but CJ always went out, no matter whether it was Dragons away or a European Cup match, and he was always man of the match. It was incredible how he always put in big performances. So I know there's a group of young fellas that will be delighted, because now there's a void to fill, but sometimes it's great to actually have a senior pro there to actually show you the way and help you to make it. So there is opportunity for some of them, but I think for the whole squad it is a loss in terms of experience and someone that's so important. And it's the same this Saturday, Stephen, with when we look at James Ryan and Gary Ringrose out of the squad. Just for me, how would you go about that back five now? How would you pick that back row? Would you look at putting someone like Tig into the second row and bringing someone in? Or how do you go about picking the back five for Ireland this weekend?
Yeah, it's probably a headache that Andy Farrell didn't want to have coming into this game, for sure. And with Peter O'Mahony not having much game time, not only over the last couple of weeks, but the last couple of months, he hasn't played that much. So, yeah, it would be a risk putting him straight back in there. We know that he's done it before when he came back and played against the All Blacks, had been out for quite a while. But I would be tempted to play Baird in the second row. He showed glimpses that he is more than capable of mixing it at international level. Ian Henderson is playing out of his skin. He's been, you know, really commanding on the pitch for Ireland since coming back from his injury and getting off the bench in the first game against Wales. So, yeah, I'd be tempted to keep Baird, or play Baird and keep tag Byrne at number six. Keep that balance at the back row, which seems to be going really, really well. And, you know, Will Connors, wow, what a performance at the weekend against Scotland. He just seems to be getting better and better. And the bigger the games, the higher the intensity, he just seems to be getting better. So, you know, and obviously with CJ at number eight. So I'd be tempted to go with Baird, put Peter O'Mahony on the bench for, you know, the last half an hour or maybe even half time if he was to come on, add his experience, a bit more physicality, ruffle a few feathers in there. That's the way I would be edging towards it. You know, for Andy Farrell, use Baird as a good opportunity to see what he's all about.
Yeah, I like the sound of it too. I think he's got X factor and he's someone we want to see more of. Of course, everyone will say he needs to develop more and put on, but, you know, this could be the perfect window to give him an opportunity against, you know, World Cup finalists. Anywhere else on the pitch, Fez, that you think will be key decisions for Andy Farrell ahead of selection?
Well, I think the big one for me is scrum half. And I was on the phone earlier on to an old friend of mine who's played across all the UK and Ireland. And we were just chatting about, you know, Lions and everything else going forward. And, you know, the scrum half position across the board, you know, Ben Young's possibly at England, you know, is nailed down. But take him out of the equation, like, there isn't anybody else that's jumping out. Ali Price had a bit of a shocker at the weekend. Conor Murray's not in Andy Farrell, or not in form for Andy Farrell. Gibson Park, I thought his box ticking was off at the weekend, and against a better team, you know, a few of those might get punished. And, you know, Wales, the first choice scrum half towards hamstring in the opening game. So, or against England, apologies. So I just feel that there's an opportunity there for somebody to really step up this weekend to say, you know, Warren, not only Andy Farrell, but Warren Gatland, look, I'm here, I'm playing well. So it's going to be interesting to who's selected at nine. And again, like, Conor Murray has not played much rugby at all over the last while and suffered with a few niggles, but I would like to see him play. Do you know that? I really would like to see him play. I know how much of a class player he is. I've played with him, I've played against him, and he uses, you know, that class, and he has the experience. So maybe the old Murray-Sexton combination might come back to town in Dublin on Sunday, or Saturday, sorry.
What about on the wing, Stephen? We had Rory Best on Monday, and he was suggesting that perhaps Jordan Larmour or Jacob Stockdale could be in with the chance, just considering how James Lowe performed at the weekend.
Yeah, like, it's hard to argue with Rory. I'm sure, you know, his opinion is that you know, James Lowe didn't play particularly well. A player like James Lowe, you're always looking for him to get into the game early. And, you know, his first touch of the ball, he broke down the open side and palmed Ali Price off and got the offload back into Johnny Sexton. And I was just watching the TV going, oh, here we go, this is what he's all about. And if anything, he sort of deteriorated throughout the game and looked a bit shaky at times. Yes, he does have a lot of ability going forward, but, like, watching Jacob Stockdale, you know, getting his match fitness back, I know it was against the Dragons at the Principality Stadium, lots more space at Pro 14 level, but he just looks, you know, a real attacking threat, and I would get him back in there. And with Hugo Keenan playing really well at 15, get him back on the wing where he's, you know, broken records for Ireland scoring tries in Six Nations, and, you know, I personally would get him straight back in there. Jordan Larmour, he's got a bit of X factor, but he hasn't been able to demonstrate that of late. Limited opportunity, and maybe Andy Farrell's going to go with him and release Jacob Stockdale off the bench. But I wouldn't be surprised if he went with Lou again, actually.
Stephen, for you, I know we don't have teams, but we know how this game has gone over the last few years. How do you think it will go this Saturday? Will we stand up to the physical confrontation and be able to answer that and get the result?
Well, we can't just keep, you know, having one-out runners, Donica, and running into brick walls. Like, the last game we played against England with 60% possession, and they were laughing at us, you know, eating us up, chewing us and spitting us back out again in the defensive line, and it was very frustrating to watch. And, you know, Andy Farrell come out and talked after that game about, you know, how proud he was in the effort of the second half. But you and I both know that's not good enough to beat England. You have to have more than that. You know, the up and under work well against Scotland. Maybe they will target the backfield a bit more and try and get those 50-50 balls again to bounce their way. But I would like to see a few more line breaks, try and get their big game players into the games early and see what happens. But England have got their tails up. But it's a brilliant matchup because, Now, if France had a beaten England, I don't think there would be the same hype around this game. And, you know, with England coming off the back of a really, really good victory and an impressive performance, and Ireland maybe not as an impressive performance, but a good, solid victory away from home, it tees it up really well for this weekend. But, yeah, they got to have a bit more to their game. Only three line breaks, limited offloads again against Scotland, and, you know, two tries, one of those being the bounce of a ball, which, you know, Robbie Henshaw cleaned up. So for me, yeah, they got to keep evolving. And hopefully they can do that.
Yeah, we all hope for a better performance, but I'll be honest with you, Stephen, this weekend I'd just gladly take the result. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Dad.
Game On Rugby.
Donegal, Stephen is right. It is teed up really, really nicely. And I know in the past, history probably does come into play. I think things have probably moved on a little bit from that, just from the outside looking in. But when you're in camp, does history still matter, do you think?
It does. I'll be honest with you a little bit. You remember losses. You carry them a little bit with you. So I'd take it. But you do remember. But the main thing, Marie, is you want to stop it. And what England do to beat you is one of the most frustrating things you can come up with. It's schoolyard stuff, you know what I mean? They just bully you, and you can be beaten by skillful teams and you never mind it, but when you just get run over, it really does hurt.
And I imagine you know that going into the game, that they're going to come out and try and bully you, and you, what do you do to try and counter that?
I promise you, Marie, that's why it's so hard, because you know you're going to get a punch in the nose and then you walk away after getting it, you know. And like, I know we'll all slate them in the papers and we'll all have a dig off them on Monday night, but it's just you yourself, it's a scar you'd always carry, and it's really, really tough. So I can't wait for it. And do you know what's crazy, today being so proud of being Irish, the week with Cheltenham, everything, it's all building up nicely, hopefully for a great game on Saturday.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to hear what Ruby says about how it feels over in Cheltenham, and we'll be chatting to him very, very shortly. We're going to take a quick break now though, and then we're going to talk League of Ireland.
Game On on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on the go chicken bites, 100% natural and packed with protein. Game On Football.
So the League of Ireland gets underway in just a couple of days, and to talk us through all of the upcoming action, I'm delighted to say that we are joined by Vinnie Perth. Vinnie, how are things?
Yeah, all good. Really looking forward to season to get back up and running. It's very exciting. We've been waiting a long time for it, so thankfully the warm weather coming back looks good.
Yeah, it really does. Is it hard though to be looking on now, the new season about to start, and not being part of it, because it's been a long time really since you haven't been there at the forefront?
Yeah, listen, you miss it badly. You miss, there's no doubt about it. Even standing in the rain and the wind of January, February during pre-season, you do miss that. I don't even know what to tell you. So it's disappointing not to be involved in it, but look, that's just the way it goes sometimes, and you've got to get on with it. But it's certainly something to look forward to. I think the excitement around the President's Cup game last week really whet the appetite, I feel. So really looking forward to the season ahead.
Yeah, it was a good game, actually. You know, the weather aside, it just seemed to have a lot to it. Like, there was lots of cards. You could tell there was a bit of a niggle. There were some really good goals and penalties as well. But what do you think that we learned from those two teams?
I suppose both managers will tell you it's a pre-season game and not to look too much into it. But to be fair, I think there was a lot to take out of it. And first of all, as well as Shamrock Rovers, the loss of Jack Bourne, who was being sort of the talisman of the league for so long, I think that's a huge blow for them. And for me, as important is the loss of Aaron McInniff. I think he's been probably the best player in the league for the last 2 years. Obviously Jack Bourne has been the star. Just the goals they've lost and the energy and the running power of Aaron McInniff in the midfield. And I felt, particularly with Dundalk going down to 10 men, I don't think Rovers really dominated at that stage. So I think that may be something that would be something where Stephen Bradley would be a little bit concerned about, and something he has to fix. Obviously, he brought Danny Mandrew in, which could be a really exciting signing. But that's something they'd be a little bit concerned about coming out of game, and it's something I would have noticed. But there's no doubt Shamrock Rovers are very strong heading into the season.
Vinny, it wasn't just a run out though. It was a game of pure niggle, wasn't it? It leaves us know what's coming ahead with hopefully what's going to be a great league.
Yeah, and I think you've had that for years in the league. In the last number of years, Dundalk and Cork, and now it's Dundalk and Rovers. And this, like, you know, Dunica, there's no different than Munster, Leinster, or Celtic and Rangers, or whatever the case may be. Once the top two teams compete against each other, sports people generally, it'd be wrong to say dislike each other, but there's always a needle and an edge to them, because they all want this so much. And I think that was good. I thought it's a good sign. You know, you look at, you know, some of the top games in England and people hugging. I remember John Stones and Harry Maguire hugging each other after the Manchester Derby, and that's not real football for me. But it was great what we seen last week. That sort of real rivalry, and it's good. And I think Pat Hoogan's comments were the starting of that, and Stephen Bradley's backup comments, and they're no harm. And I think it doesn't do any harm to promote a league as best we can.
Yeah, I think from a media point of view anyway, it's great to have those little bit of sound bites just for the build up and just to keep people interested as well, because I think everybody loves a bit of drama. Just in terms of drama, really, I guess there was a lot maybe over the last week or so about the managerial setup in Dundalk, with Shane Keegan kind of fronting the coaching ticket there. Do you think that's going to be difficult for them to navigate, really, Vinny?
Yeah, it doesn't make loads of sense in terms of the press conference they done last week, because this whole change, people have said it was similar to when I took over. It is different, but we won't go into the whole pro-license situation, but I was on my course, and UEFA would allow that, that you're on the, once you're on the course, you're recognised as somebody who's capable of managing the team in European football. The problem for Dundalk was the manager isn't on the course and doesn't look like he can get on one anytime soon, because they take 2 years to complete and there's only one at a time. So it's created a problem for them. They were heavily fined and they've had to do something, but there is one or two other clubs doing similar things to what Dundalk are doing, so I just don't understand why they turned the floodlights on themselves and made such a dramatic statement. So it is confusing. It wasn't the smartest thing to do before the start of the season, but I just don't believe the team is going to be picked by committee. I just find that hard to understand, but we'll wait and see. And ultimately, if Dundalk continue to get results, people will stop paying attention to it, so that's the key to it all.
Vinny, it can be confusing for us from outside, but from the player's point of view, if you have dual management there, it can get very, you know, it could divide a squad, you could have players listening to one and just get very divisive.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say to you, Donegan, is I don't believe it's dual management. I believe there's only one person in charge of the club and in terms of the playing side of it. So I don't think the players will be confused, and so therefore I don't understand the optics of what Dundalk have done and what they felt they need to do. But that's just my opinion. Maybe it is different. Maybe it's general management with inside. We don't know, but I don't think it is. I think there'll be ultimately the manager from last season will be making most of the key decisions. So I just believe that.
I'd say it would be important for them now to just to get a win under their belt, so that people stop talking about everything that's happening maybe behind the scenes, just in terms of the players coming in and the management situation and the comments about Shamrock Rovers as well, just to get back talking about the action. So it's Dundalk and Sligo Rovers up first.
Yeah, and I think it's a really difficult game for Dundalk, and it's sort of the one you wouldn't want. We found it difficult there. We've had some great results. I remember losing there myself. It's a difficult place to go. Liam Buckley has built a really strong squad there. I think they'll be. I think it might be a season where the top two aren't as far ahead as everyone else. But the one thing with Dundalk is, over the Stephen Kenny era, we call it. They were very attack-minded. They were, you know, good on the eye. They were free-flowing football. I think there's a change there. People will start to see that. We know it's in President's Cup, three centre-halves, And two wing backs are generally defenders. So that's five defenders of Chris Shields in front of them. So Dundalk this season mightn't be as easy on the eye, but they will be difficult to beat probably. But they've a really tough task on the Sligo, as I said, Romeo Park coming back, and Sligo look really strong this year, and I think Liam has done a really good job. And as I said, I feel in the spring, or in whether it's Sligo or Pat in the league this year, and I think I just don't think the top two are as far ahead of everyone else as they were, and so it's fascinating to see how they get on this weekend.
And Sligo seem to be doing all right in pre-season, and just from following their results, the name Johnny Kenny keeps popping up, scoring goals, and only a young lad.
Yeah, it's exciting. There's been a lot of talk about John around Sligo for a while, and I suppose he's just popped up with a lot of goals, still doing his leaving cert. And it's great. We need that. We've lost a lot of talent out of the league in the last 3 or 4 years, I would say. So we need some new people coming through. But they're very strong throughout the club there. I think, as I said to you, Walter Figueroa, Romeo Parks, really strong up front. And they have also like a little bit of experience in, you know, John Russell, David Crawley at the club. So Greg Bulger obviously won many leagues, has gone up there. So Liam has been clever, a lot of young players with something to prove and a lot of experience, and a really strong goalkeeper as well, which is important. So and I probably think one of the, you know, up and coming centre backs in John Mann, only 21. So Sligo are very strong. Great club, brilliant grounds, and I think this could be a year where they probably kick on. They qualified for Europe, and they might be able to kick on this year. So yeah, really interesting.
They definitely will be, a lot of momentum from the end of the last season as well. So I suppose the big game really of the round that a lot of people will be keeping eyes on is Shamrock Rovers and St. Pat's, because Shamrock Rovers is going for back-to-back titles, Vinny, and you know yourself, it's not an easy thing to do.
No, it's not, and I think, as I said earlier on, the loss of two really key men for them, so it's going to be interesting. I think Pats are much stronger this year, particularly their first 11, so Dundalk and Rovers have a really difficult weekend ahead of them in the first game of the season. You know, Rovers have to prove that sort of will to win is still there. A lot of teams can win the league just one off or twice, so they've got to you know, back it up, and it's a really difficult start. I think St. Pat's sort of front line now, they hadn't got enough goals in the team last year, and Ronan Coughlin is a brilliant signing from Sligo. Billy King looks really fit. I've seen him in pre-season, and I suppose they've added Matty Smith from Waterford, so that front three is as good as anything in the league, with the exception probably of Junior Michael Duffy and maybe Pat Hoban or David McMillan. So the front three of Pat's as good as anything that's in the league. Again, are they the one that gets in between the top two this year, like Bowles did last season? It'd be interesting to see. So I think Stephen O'Donnell's done a really strong job there, and behind that front three, they've Robbie Benson and Chris Forrester. So that front five is as good as anything in the league. So it will be a really tasty game. I think it's a shame it's not in front of fans. You would have got a 7,000-8,000 at least crowd down there in Tallaght Stadium. So,
don't remind
really
us,
game to start with it. Yeah, it's unfortunately the game that keeps popping up on my reminders is the one from last year with 7,500 Dundalk against Rovers. Brilliant advertisement for the league, but we lost, so I'm still not over yet 12 months later.
My young lads were mascots that day. It was the last game that they were at, and they keep talking about it as well. You mentioned Bowes there, and like, kind of interesting because a lot of their signings I think were done maybe towards the end of the season. They re-signed a lot of players, and they lost some players as well, particularly their attackers, and I guess a lot of the questions are really where are their goals going to come from this year?
Yeah, I think Twardick and Danny Grant were two exceptional players last season, particularly the first half of the season, and they really set Bowes up to finish where they finished, got them into Europe in second. And to be fair to them, the only really team that pushed Rovers last season. So I think that's they brought in Thomas Alula and Georgie Kelly. Georgie had a decent point in time at Pats, he scored a couple of goals, but he's disappointing. But Georgie's a really top striker. Thomas Alua, a young lad from Rovers, has a bit to prove, so that will be fascinating. Bastianieri coming back into the league in midfield, Interesting to see how he gets on, because he's not a typical Bowls player, so that will be interesting. But they've got real young players, obviously Dawson Devoy, Ross Tierney, really strong young players. Stephen Mallon looks a good player. So a lot of good young players, and we don't know how they're going to get on. We don't know what Bowls, the lads tend to do, the staff there do a brilliant job in developing young players. So they've a lot of work on their hands, and you know, Bowls finished second last season, so it will be difficult for them to replicate that. But they have made some good signings, and will be fascinating to see how Georgie Kelly does.
Yeah, absolutely. When we look then at the game that kicks us off, Drogheda versus Waterford, how do you think that's going to go? And not only both of those for the season ahead, how would you have hopes for them?
Yeah, it's really difficult to work out. I mean, we don't know too much about Waterford at the moment in terms of songs. What an amazing man and a career he had in Kevin Sheedy as the manager. So they've a lot of loan signing coming in. I think the important part for them is the two Murphys. Brian Murphy in goal is probably the best keeper in the league, and Darrell Murphy's had an outstanding career for Ireland and in the UK. So two older lads, but if they can get enough talent around them, both of them could carry them to a point. But to be fair to the signing of someone like Dane Massey, Ronan Murray, and they've a lot of really exciting young players as well in that squad. Tim Clancy's done a good job there. But it's difficult to know. Both teams just arriving in the Premier, or Drogheda arriving in the Premier Division for the first time, Waterford being a bit more experienced. So, difficult one to call. The team coming up, Drogheda, you'd normally expect them to have a bounce and being excited back in the Premier Division. Difficult result last week. They lost 4-1 to Bray in a friendly. That can hurt before the season starts. So it's a really difficult one to call. So it'll be fascinating to see how Drogheda does. I think the league needs a strong Drogheda back in the Premier Division. So we look forward to seeing them this season.
Vinnie, anyone that has played in the league always talks about how difficult the step up is, and so many teams do come up and go back down again. Longford and Derry is quite an interesting one, obviously Longford coming up, but it does feel like there's pressure on Declan Devine before the season has even started.
Yeah, I think, to be fair to Declan, like it is a difficult job up in Derry. I nearly said it's another country, and I don't think on Paddy's Day I should even make that joke. What I mean by it's so far away, it's hard to get players. There's so many clubs historically have been the Dublin-based clubs are in around Dublin, where a lot of the players have been based for many years. But it's difficult. But I think what Derry have is they've got Parkhouse, David Parkhouse back, who is a brilliant striker, and I think Will Patching is one of the most exciting players I ever signed or worked with, and we worked with quite a few decent ones at Longford over the years. So I think they've a real chance in Derry again to improve. I hope Declan's not under pressure, because he won silverware not that long ago there, and not many people have done that in Derry in the history of Derry. So I hope it works out for him. With Longford, it's very difficult for them to come up, won't have a big budget, but fascinating how to see someone like Aidan Durbin gets on, a local lad, and it's amazing. I spent 8 years as a player in Longford and had some success there, and I imagine the locals are really excited about having one of their own, because that is so uncommon for Longford. And he's a really exciting midfielder, and it'll be fascinating to see how he gets on in the Premier Division. So it will be difficult for Longford, but no different than someone like Finn Harps. They will have a difficult time in the Premier Division, and really ultimately it'll be about staying up come the end of the season.
Okay, so we're going to finish up very shortly, but just who do you think is going to win this year, Vinnie?
I think on paper Shamrock Rovers are favourites. I think they were that good last season. They remain favourites. We don't know what we're going to get out of Dundalk, because there's so many new signings. I think, to be fair to Dundalk, they had to sign people from outside of the league, and they've done that. The Albanian goalkeeper, Ferro Oil, and centre half, so it's Latvian right foot, so it's all exciting and it's something different. I think they had to do that. We don't know where that's going to be. Isn't it where someone like Pats of Sligo just break the mould and come out himself. A bit like what Dundalk done in 2014. Is it that year? We'll see. But on paper, it has to be Shamrock Rovers are favourites. And we learned very quickly how they dealt with the loss of McInniff and Jack Bourne. So it is one where you would say they stand out for now.
Okay, well, Vinnie Perth, thanks so much for joining us.
Game on football.
Yeah, super to chat to Vinnie Marie. And just your own take on it. I know you would absolutely love to be there on Friday night, bringing the lads down to the match, the curry chips, but you can't be there. But how do you see League of Ireland going this year?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Vinnie, all right. It is hard to know really what kind of a team Dundalk are going to have, because there are a lot of new players and it does take a while for new players to gel. Now, they do still have a strong backbone of players there as well to call on. But Shamrock Rovers, there are question marks over them as well, because Jack Byrne is gone and Aaron McInniff are gone, and they're just such big players. Danny Mandrew is in, so I'm really actually looking forward to see how he gets on and what Stephen Bradley can do with him. He was a really big player for Bows for a while, but he was in and out of the team a little bit towards the end, and it didn't go the way everybody imagined it to towards the end of his stint there. So that should be interesting. But I kind of, probably with a lot of people, I do think that Shamrock Rovers have a really good squad. There's a lot of quality. They're well coached, so my money would be on them. And that game, the Shamrock over Saints Pat's game, is on RT2 on Friday night as well, for anyone who wants to tune in.
Super stuff. Yeah, it'd be great to see it. I always find it interesting though, especially with League of Ireland, how many players go to other teams. It's incredible, isn't it? Like
watching on Friday night, actually it was quite interesting, just even seeing Danny Mandra for the first time in the green and white, and there's a couple of Dundalk players as well that had signed a little while back, and just seeing them in the hoop jerseys, very very strange. But look, the thing about it is that, you know, they have to move around, they have to get better deals. It's you know, one team will dominate for a while and they'll have the better contracts. And even now, there, Graham Burke has signed a 3-year contract with Shamrock Rovers, and he could potentially be in the Ireland squad. He probably won't be, but he was definitely be in an extended squad for the Republic of Ireland when they announce tomorrow. So it's great to see him getting such a long contract, because that's not there all the time. There was actually a really good article in the Indo earlier in the week. Tim Clancy, who is the Drogheda manager, and thereafter getting promoted, was with Daniel McDonnell, and he was detailing how he has to work from 11 p.m. till 7 a.m. in I think it's in the Super Value distribution centre or something like that, just so that he can be League of Ireland manager. He comes home for a few hours, sleeps, and then goes and gets all his sessions together. So it's difficult for people.
It's incredible. And then the family sacrifices on top of that. Okay, quick break and we're back chatting Camogie, and we're heading to Cheltenham to catch up with Ruby.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way. Game on GAA.
So this weekend, Limerick Camogie are soloing across Limerick within the 5 kilometres. Of course, they are supporting Focus Ireland and the Players Training Fund, and showcasing the best of what the city and county has to offer. And I'm delighted to say we are joined by Limerick star Murrin Kramer. Murrin, a brilliant initiative and well needed as well, like Focus Ireland and your own training fund too.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, the two things tie in very well together. First of all, Focus Ireland is a fantastic charity that's been helping homelessness around Ireland for many years, and I suppose we're very fortunate to all have roofs over our heads, so we want to try and give back to people who aren't so fortunate. And then I suppose in conjunction with your own training fund as well, funds are very difficult to come by for women in sport, so it's just to try and get ourselves set up for the year coming ahead.
And Murrin, can you tell us what you're doing? I know it involves from your under 14 teams up to your seniors, so everyone's involved. What exactly are you taking on?
Yeah, so this weekend, St. Patrick's weekend, and Saturday and Sunday, we will be soloing 4 kilometres across the county, I suppose in our own local area, so we're not breaking the 5 kilometre rules. And we're going to be soloing the under 14 county teams the whole way up to the senior county team, and we'll be getting our own clubs involved as well. So we're hoping that we'll have plenty of people to turn out on the weekend to solo and take part in the challenge.
Jackie Hurley has nominated me, so I better get the old Hurley hat over the weekend. I definitely will. But look, if people do want to get involved and to donate, how do they do that?
Yeah, so if we're on Twitter, we've Limerick Camogie has an account on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and the link for the donations are up on those pages. And if you follow any of the inter-county players on Instagram or anything like that as well, the links are in the bios, so you can donate what you like.
We'll also share them on our socials here, and delighted to give it a push. Mirren, how's your own training going? Is this actually, are you delighted to have a bit of this now that you can get to work on a few extra skills?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is nearly our first challenge. We feel like this is our first championship match. So we're going hell for leather for this now, to be honest. But look, it's been difficult. I suppose this lockdown has been the most difficult for us, I suppose, as players. And I think most people across the country as well. The first lockdown, we were quite focused and motivated. And the one before Christmas, we were just after finishing our inter-county season. So I suppose it was time to relax. But now we're all ready for action. So we're hoping that in the next few weeks, we will get back to the playing pitch. Obviously, when it's safe to do so.
And what about your new manager then? How has that been working out?
Yeah, so it's been great. It's been very difficult for Pat to get to know us. I suppose he's been getting to know us virtually online through Zoom. We've been doing Zoom calls and meetings and some sessions on Zoom every week. So it has been difficult for him to get to know us. But he's done a great job so far. He's really driving this fundraiser as well. And hopefully when we do get onto the pitch, I suppose we have a lot of people on the Zoom calls at the moment. We've almost over 80 girls, so 80 players. So there will have to be two panels made out back for the junior and the senior panel. So he'll have a tough job to narrow that down when we do get back onto the pitch.
But Mirren, that's a brilliant way to be, isn't it? That we've so many people playing, you know what I mean? We always chat about, you know, keeping girls in sport, and to have, you know, selection headaches is a brilliant way to be.
Absolutely, yeah. No, you're definitely right there. It's great, and it's great for Camogie across the county, and the clubs have really bought into. We have a new county board this year as well, and Grace McNamara, Sheila Moynihan, they're leading the way, two past players, so they've really pushed the clubs to take part at all county levels as well. So, no, it's fantastic.
Mirren, it has been a turbulent time for Limerick Camogie, and I suppose a lot of the conversation about the setup probably hasn't been for the right reasons, and results didn't go the way you wanted them to last year. But it does feel like, you know, with the new county board, with the new manager, and, you know, a new season ahead, that things are changing.
Absolutely, yeah. No, we have had a difficult few years. I think we know as players what we're capable of. We won the Munster final in 2016. The minor girls won the minor A final that year as well. So I suppose we know what we are capable of doing. And I suppose we have had difficulties, especially over the past year, with management and county board issues, but they've all been resolved. And we can really see from the county board and both management this year that they've already raised standards. So I suppose it's up to us now as players to raise our standards as well, and hopefully in the coming year we can improve.
Absolutely. Mirren, we wish you the very best of luck this weekend.
Thanks, Millian.
So you're soloing across the county. It's all in aid of Focus Ireland, and we'll push it out in our socials as well. The very best of luck this weekend and the coming season ahead.
Thanks, Millian. Game on.
GAA. It's time to put the kettle on. She's won the Champion Jay. She's beaten Nuba Negra. Jacqueline Persoir had nothing left in the vital, exhausting climb to the line. Granatine joined the favourite for third place late in the day, but it's a big race success for jockey Aidan Coleman. Put the kettle on has won, continuing a stunning week for trainer Henry de Bromhead.
But this is Tiger Roll at the final fence, up and over safely. It's going to be a third victory in the race for him, a fifth Cheltenham Festival success for Tiger Roll. He looks as good as ever, doesn't he? They race towards the line then. Keith Donoghue and Tiger Roll have won the Glenfarclas Cross Country Chase. Easy's land.
What a day for the Irish at Cheltenham. Six winners, and we've Ruby Walsh standing by. Ruby.
It was a brilliant day, Marie. St. Patrick's Day didn't feel like St. Patrick's Day, but it was St. Patrick's Day. And yeah, six winners, and just touched off in the other one. And Tucastis, it didn't quite peg back Sky Pirate, but an incredible day. I mean, 11, there's been 28 races so far, or 14 races, sorry. You know, Ireland are just, the Irish trained horses are just dominating.
Is it very strange over there? We didn't get to go into it too much with you yesterday.
It is. Now, I suppose, look, I've been on this show with you often enough and we're telling people, or trying to tell people that, you know, keep going, keep moving, like All-Ireland finals and watching the Premier League and all of that stuff. But to be involved in something as big as this, even the Six Nations, and it to be so empty. Like, I thought Galway was strange. Leopard's Town on Christmas was weird. This is just off the charts different. It's like so eerie, and it's such a special place. And like, there's like Richie Condon wrote a winner today for Paul Hennessy, and it should have been such a magic day for them. You had to turn at the top of the track to walk back down in front of the grandstand, and there's literally five people.
Yeah,
it's just it is so eerie, and everyone is there is trying their best to cheer each other on. Even all the Irish stable staff are in the best mate enclosure, and you know you can hear the, you can nearly tell who's shouting. You can hear the individual voices, and there's that big an echo around the place.
I've been watching it now for the last couple of days on TV, and like you pop up and you're in a little, looks like a little booth anyway. So like when something amazing happens, like Tiger Roller, like maybe Shaq and Perswan not winning today, like are you able to react, or are you just sitting there?
No, I am able to react. I'm in on the fourth or fifth floor of the Princess Royal stand, and it has a balcony actually, so I've been able to go out the door of the balcony and
you
shout
like
down.
You look like you're locked in there. What you're doing?
No, I'm not locked in, and shout down, and like at different people coming back down the walkway, and they've ridden winners, and you know. But I was so lucky in my career to walk back down that chute so many times in front of a packed grandstand, and. You know, so many well-wishers. It's like a lap of honour on a pitch. And no one's getting the lap of honour. It just feels so... the achievement is still there. And that's basically... That is what it's all about, the achievement. They're all achieving, but they're not getting the plaudits they should be experiencing. And I do feel a little sorry for each and every one of them.
But, Ruby, they're bringing the performances, aren't they? You know, normally, like I know when I used to play, you needed a bit off the crowd to bring you to that level. We're not seeing that with the jockeys, even the horses. Everyone has been incredible.
Yeah, they are, but you see, that's probably the... I won't say the beauty of horse racing, but for us, it's a novelty to perform in front of 70,000 people. It's an absolute novelty. You might get it in Galway in the summer, 40-ish thousand, but Cheltenham and Aintree are the only places big enough and with that volume of people. So it's a novelty. Monday to Friday, all year round, you are basically performing in an empty stadium. So you're well used to it.
So I think there was a lot of highlights today, and let's start with the big race, Ruby. Put the kettle on, and you said afterwards you have had to eat humble pie.
More than humble pie, I'm eating whole cake, Marie, let alone one slice. I have been, I suppose, campaigning all year that Put the Kettle On should be running in the Mrs. Paddy Power Chase on Friday. I thought it was more her level, but horses for courses. And she was really good today. She was really tough. But Henry de Bromhead's horses are on fire. And he probably didn't get the recognition yesterday that he deserved for Honeysuckle. It was about Honeysuckle and it was about Rachel, and that was the story. And unfortunately, that's the way things go. But what he has done with Honeysuckle's career, like when he got her, where he's placed her, the races he's run her in, he's allowed her to mature and get better and keep improving. And he produced her yesterday in incredible form, and today would Put the Kettle On. Like, he hasn't run her since Christmas time, and she got well beaten by Shaq and Boursois. He knows she likes Cheltenham, brings her back here today in incredible order. His horses look so well and they're running out of their skins, and he deserves unbelievable credit.
I guess you'd know more than anyone then, Ruby, like how difficult it is to peak at the right time when it comes to preparing for these big races. And Tiger Roll seemed to do it again.
Yeah, I watched him in Navan a couple of weeks ago, and I suppose for racing, he's almost the poster boy, if you know what I mean. He's a horse, he's a name that goes outside of the sport. And to watch him today, to watch Keith Donoghue on him, to watch Keith's interview after the race and how emotional he got about Tiger Roll, and to watch the horse go through it, how he travelled, how he jumped, his enthusiasm, the accuracy of how he was jumping, it was magical to watch. And I'm one of the very few people who was privileged to stand there and watch it live and then listen to Keith Donoghue afterwards. And like, Keith is the wrong side of 6 foot to be a jockey. He's not the wrong side of 11 stone. He's the wrong side of 12 stone, naturally.
He said he runs 70, 80, 90 kilometres every week just to get the opportunity to ride.
I've met him here, Marie, this week. And going down in the shuttles back from the hotel we're all staying in, where you're in this, we're in a bubble. Basically, we haven't left the site since we got here. And I've been going down in one of the shuttle buses and met Keith running back towards us. Now, we're up good and high here. It's all downhill to the track. Oh. And to see him running back, he's like, twice a day I saw him head off running. And it's not to stay fit. It's just to burn off weight, to shed a few extra pounds. Like, the effort he makes is incredible. He started young and he turned professional and things took off for him and he flew as a young jockey. And then he started to grow. But unfortunately, he couldn't go back to being an amateur because he had too many winners ridden. And he just kept getting bigger and bigger. And he was snookered. And you know, he's had good times and bad times. And to see him today, he just deserves it.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Look, you mentioned the job that Henry de Bromhead has been doing on his horses, but I think it's probably a tricky enough one with Gordon Elliott today and him not being there and not being able to witness things.
Yeah, it is. And look, that's just the way it is. I don't know, Marie, that's just the way it is. Like,
it's a tricky one to navigate, because I know there has been a lot of people pointing out that, you know, he wasn't really mentioned in the coverage. But look, I suppose so much has happened over the last few weeks that focusing on the positive is probably the best way to approach it. Rachel Blackmore is certainly one that has been positive.
It is, but it's like everything in life. The past can never be changed. You can only move on with the future. So it's what's going to happen next. What's gone by is gone by. And Rachel today, tactically, Marie, she was brilliant twice. Like, she'd five rides today, she got three falls and she rode two winners. Like, in the first race she made all the right decisions on Bob Ollinger and he's by far the best horse, but in the last race there was no pace. She rode Sir Gerhard, he was second favourite, it was a slowly run contest. She jumped out in front and dictated the race and got it absolutely spot on. It was good to watch, but I, as much as I admire her tactically, I'm kind of in awe of her physically, how she takes the falls. I'm looking at the falls she got in the handicap chase thinking, I'm sitting like however far away, I'm nearly feeling sore for her. And then she stands up and on she goes again. Wow. It's if you watch the slap she got today,
she nearly bounces. It's actually quite fascinating to hear you talking about her, and also AP, and he said that she's brilliant at simplicity. What does that mean?
It's like everything. The more you complicate something, the more chance you have of getting it wrong. And you see it in a lot of sports. People overcomplicating things and forgetting to do the basics. And I always heard it listening to Ronan O'Gara, and he basically would always compare it to the All Blacks. And that's what he would always say. They were just brilliant at simplicity. And it's the same at Rachel. It's just doing the basics, and doing the basics so right. And she does that.
Did Paul Townend complicate things with Monkfish?
No, he didn't. Monkfish today wasn't the Monkfish we saw in Leopardstown. For whatever reason, he went to the second fence, Paul saw a good enough stride and the horse didn't pick up. And then they were at sixes and sevens and Paul was struggling to get a grasp on where Monkfish was today. But he adapted to it in a high enough pressure situation and the horse still delivered. And even between the last two, I mean, Eclat the rear was the loose horse, arrived up on his outside going to the second last near, and Paul lands and instinctively he reacted and went to try and race through on the loose horse's inside, but the loose horse wouldn't let him by, and all of a sudden going to the last and he's in a pocket and you're thinking, oh no, this could be carnage, and they get out of it. But look, you need things to go right for you, and that one went right for Paul.
Ruby, heading into day three, and you mentioned the bubble there. Does it feel like a team over there at the moment? Is it like, we have him on the rack, let's keep the foot in the throat and finish him off?
Donegal, to listen to all the stable staff that are doing incredible job, to listen to them trying to lift the atmosphere of the place, yeah, it does feel like a team. You're looking over on the stand and William Mullins' staff are clapping Henry de Bromhead's horses, and Sneezy Foster's staff are standing behind them clapping as well. You're looking at opponents clapping each other because they're all seeing themselves as almost Team Ireland, and it is wonderful to watch and to see, and the effort they've made and the effort the IHRB have made to with testing and paperwork and protocols to get everyone here and to get them all home, it looks like an effort that's going to be worth it.
And Paul Townend, actually, just to give him a bit of a mention, he did a lovely interview after the Monkfish win and thanked Jennifer Pugh as well for all the work that she had done to get everybody there safely.
Yeah, and so I was listening to him, I was thinking, yeah, fair play to you. I mean, he is champion jockey, but he was the one who stood up and said it live on television. He was able to think broad enough to say that, and I must say I thought it was a good conversation.
Absolutely. Now, Ruby, before we let you go tomorrow, what should we look forward to?
Well, sure, look, it looks like the horses that left Gordon Elliott's are none the worse for it. So Envoy Allen in the first, he'll be hard to beat. The Boss is Oscar in the second. The third race is the Ryanair. I think Willie Mullins could win it. Which one? Mellon, Mean or Alaho? Not really sure. I think England will get a winner in the Stayers Hurdle. I think Paisley Park will win there. And then the other couple of races could be Irish as well. Look, 19 is a record for Irish horses. They're on, I think, 11 now. They could get 5 more tomorrow. 16 before they head into the last day. I think you could be into the 20s for the Irish horses, the dominance they have right now.
Well, Ruby, if you're talking to everybody over there like you are talking to us, I think that everybody will be out there trying to get all those big wins. Thanks so much for coming on tonight, Ruby. I appreciate it, and you will be here all week. And that's all we have time for. Conor Bean is up next, Donica.
Yep, that's right. We're back tomorrow at 6.
With Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.